Flying Cool Tech, March 7th, 2006.
Coming to you from Louisville, Kentucky, it's the Blind Cool Tech Podcast, the podcast about ordinary, everyday blind people. Now, here's the host of Blind Cool Tech, the fastest talking guy in Kentucky, Mr. Excitement, Larry Scoochcon.
We're at Cafe Lulu in Louisville, Kentucky, and right across the table from me is narrator extraordinaire, Jack Fox. Hey, Jack.
How you doing, Larry?
Great. Got a lot of questions for you. And
all right,
like
I hope
to,
I got a lot of answers.
I'll bet you do.
I hope so.
You don't seem like the guy that's too tied for words.
Well, every now and then you get a loss for words.
First of all, I have to ask you about the bacon grease story.
The bacon grease story. I have to think about that a minute. The bacon grease story.
Well, Doug told me to ask Doug Trent. So does that ring?
The bacon grease story. Now, the only thing I can think of was when I was a college student, I was living at home and got up and working at a radio station. So all kinds of crazy hours. Got up early one morning, had to rush to make it to an 8 o'clock class. My mother had said breakfast on the stove. And I grabbed my eggs and my bacon and what I thought was a cup of coffee. And when I took a big swig, it was not a cup of coffee. It was the bacon grease. And my stomach still does flip-flops when I think about it. That was for 2 or 3 days. I had a little trouble with that. So that's probably it. So.
I'll bet that's it. I've done a similar thing, pouring tea into my cereal, instance.
Yeah, yeah.
Quite a surprise.
It doesn't taste quite, then it registers, and then you're in trouble. So. Pretty rough stuff.
Indeed. So you've been narrating for how many years, Jack?
I started about 1978 or 79. And then, of course, I was in and out. I would record regularly and then be gone for a little while. I'd do some media tour or something like that. You know.
Coffee's at about 1 o'clock.
Thank you, ma'am.
They're at about 12.
All right.
Cream's all the way over about 11.
Just in time.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I started then, and so since about 78 off and on, I was counting up because we went to Mississippi to the Library Association. Now, there my daughter Jill and I did this last weekend. And I think I've recorded around 600 books.
Is that right?
Yeah,
wow. And Jill got started shortly after
she's,
you?
She's been going about 10 years now, about 10 or 11 years we figured up. Hmm. And she's recorded a little over 300.
So tell us about this conference in Jackson, Mississippi, did you
Yes, say? It was the Mississippi Library Association for the Blind. It was actually their 75th anniversary of the act that put the original service together. And the Mississippi Council for the Blind, and then their Jackson local chapter was there also. And just a nice celebration, and evidently they have a little convention and everything.
Okay.
And so Jill and I went in and spoke Friday night at a dinner, had a nice buffet dinner, and we read a little bit. Then answered questions. I learned a long time ago it's probably best just to speak a little bit and then let people ask questions. That way you're talking about something they want to hear. You know?
Yeah, so, yeah.
And it worked out well. And then on Friday we went they have a brand new building that they're at the Library Association. It's wonderful. They evidently send out about 12,000 to 14,000 books a month to patrons there in Mississippi.
Wow.
Seems like a lot to me.
It sure is.
They're sending a lot of books out, very organized, very state-of-the-art.
Well, it'll be interesting to follow that as the switch gets made over to digital talking books.
Yeah, they're still using cassettes, of course, but they're working toward the digital stuff.
Jack, you'd done a lot of work with the Louisville media, I guess probably before I moved here.
I started at WHAS Radio here in Louisville back in 1973. I worked for them for several years, then took several years off and just freelanced.
Okay.
And then went back about 1984, and from 84 to 94, I guess. I was there. I left in 94. I've been freelancing ever since, and I have some other business interests and things like that.
Oh, yeah?
But I was on the radio there. I started radio when I was in high school.
Oh, really?
Actually, I tell people I'm a Harvard graduate. I graduated from Harvard at 17, and they always do what you do, and they chuckle and think, now, how could that be, you know? But it was Harvard, Illinois High School.
Oh, okay.
I only tell them that if they don't chuckle too much, you know? But I graduated from Harvard, Illinois High School, and I started radio there. It was a little town northwest of Chicago. In one of those little daytime radio stations, you know, that you did everything. You mowed the grass and
right.
Read the grain reports and the obituaries and everything. You know, it was a good experience.
And what were you doing at WHAS here? Did you have your own radio show?
I did. I was a disc jockey, or air personality, or whatever you called it. Yeah. We were middle-of-the-road music, and then we became kind of a music talk station. We were making that transition to all talk.
Mm-hmm.
We had the freedom to stop and talk about something if there was some topic that was particularly relevant.
Okay.
If it wasn't, we just shut up and play music.
Nice.
We had that option. They don't have that option anymore. They've got to talk whether they have something to say or not. You know. So, but that was good. I had a good time there, good career. Met a lot of good friends.
And what about your freelancing? I think we all recognize you in airports all
over the country. Yeah, I've gotten, of all the things I've done, Larry, I've gotten probably more notoriety from that than anything else, you know. At my church, every week at least three people stop me and say, hey, I heard you in Tuscaloosa or something.
The moving sidewalk is ending.
That's right. That's in about... around 100 airports around the country, and then I found out now internationally it's in Kuala Lumpur and in Melbourne, Australia. At least I know those two. They have English-speaking announcements there.
Well, I'll be done.
Came about a result of a company in J-Town, Alan Martin Productions, or actually a division of that, IED, Innovative Electronic Design. Hardy Martin either created or perfected a computerized paging system that they use in airports so announcements won't walk on each other, and then they started supplying voices.
Well, right out of Louisville.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah.
Do you know what you want, Jack?
I think I do, but if you want to, you need a minute, or you need to know about anything on here? Or?
I think I'm good, although I really hate to pass up the opportunity to have a narrator read the menu. I'm just going to go with the Spanish salad.
Okay. Do you want to add any chicken or shrimp to it?
Oh, shrimp sounds really good. Yeah.
And I'll have that small autumn salad here.
Thank you. You want to add anything to yours?
No.
Would you like bread today? Some bread?
Sure.
All right. Fix you up. Thanks.
Anyway, they created that and they put it in. And they had a lady named Carolyn Hopkins who worked for them and did a lot of voice work. And I've done a lot of voice work for them over the years. But then when the Gulf War came along in 1991, they wanted to add a male voice, and I've done a lot of things for them. So
okay.
That's when it started. And just mushroomed from there, started in Louisville, and then we began to add more announcements, and they began to transfer them. Okay, they can do that right from their studios in J-Town, anywhere in the world.
Oh, sure. So yeah, that's a nice setup.
Added, so there it is. There it is.
And what are the kind of interesting freelancing?
Well, it's actually changed a lot over the years. You used to do a lot of pieces for companies like American Printing House for the Blind, or, you know, narrating at the museum. Narrate a piece there. So pieces like that, museum pieces, sales pieces for companies, things they would use. I just recorded one for Chevron that they take to have a Chevron truck that goes around the trade shows, and you can push a button and this audio video comes up, that kind of thing.
Okay.
But about 8 or 9 years ago, I noticed that I hadn't been concentrating, I'd been doing some other things, and I noticed I'm not doing much of that anymore. And the technology came along that let a company here in Louisville pick a voice anywhere in the country, you know, with ISDN lines and MP3 and all that stuff.
Right.
So now they can get a voice anywhere, and they do. And I do some, but not as much as I used to. But I'm starting to explore that again. I'm just being aware of the technology, and I'll be able to set up just a microphone on my computer and record things.
Yeah.
Email them somewhere.
So you don't have a studio set up at home already?
I don't at this moment. But I'm working on that.
Oh, okay. Well, if you need a consultant or some help, I'd be glad to.
Very good. That'd be great. I'm sure I will.
Yeah. Well, we've got that excellent studio recorder software.
I know it.
Sure, you can.
I know it. You've done a great job with it. That's impressive.
It's. We've been having a ball.
I bet you have. Yeah. I bet you have.
On narrating books at the printing house, are there some stories there you can share with us about some funny incidents that have happened or?
Well, there are several books. In fact, when I was in Mississippi, one of the gentlemen came up to me and said, "Oh, you recorded Little Big Man." And it reminded me of how we almost didn't get through that book. It was so hilarious and so funny that you read a page, you just have to stop and laugh. You just couldn't get through it.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah, there are a bunch of scenes in there. Like, it's written well, and the book is much better than the movie, you know. The movie starred Dustin Hoffman. It was good, but the book was just hilarious, a lot of fun, funny incidents. And it was just one of those things where it appealed to me also, so we had fun with it. But there were we get some times like that when you just couldn't stop laughing.
And NLS doesn't go for the narrator laughing.
No,
on there, I guess.
Thanks to Studio Recorder, we could edit a lot of that stuff out. Then there have been other things where I know it's interesting to somebody who's on the receiving end, but to record Sports Illustrated magazine in the spring training edition of baseball, and you go through every major league roster and every player and all their stats, you know, and so you're reading for 127 hours, it seems like, everybody's batting average and how they hit left and throw right and all that stuff. So
That must be interesting to somebody. I'm not a big baseball fan, but...
Well, the guys in Mississippi over the weekend assured me that some of them did enjoy it, and I know they do.
Yeah.
It's just when you're recording it, it's almost mind-numbing.
Yeah, you don't get to add much artistic interpretation to that.
You just got
to
keep going. Hope you didn't lose your place somewhere.
Are there some characters that you really fit well into as you're narrating?
I do a lot of westerns. Louis L'Amour books and things like that. Evidently have a flair for that.
I can see where you would. I haven't heard any of your narrations.
We just finished recording this past year, actually the last 6 or 8 months, Louis L'Amour short stories, The Frontier Series, volumes 1 and 2, and very, very, very well written and fun to read, and I enjoyed the characters there. Then I've also enjoyed some of the Perry Mason books, all that B-movie dialogue and everything. I enjoyed that. So I've recorded a bunch of those. The Case of the Doddering Dowager and the Stuttering Bishop. He gets really, really carried away. Back on the Perry Mason books and on the Louis L'Amour books, it seems to take longer to read the other books by than it does the book itself. You know, they've recorded so many books.
And the reading probably goes pretty quick on those too.
Yeah, it does. Especially on the Perry Mason.
Yeah.
Whip them out pretty quick. But they're still a lot of fun. Never know. Each writer has their own style, too. Earl Stanley Gardner, for example. He'll put all kinds of red herrings in the plot here, you know, and you think you got it figured out. And then right at the end, it's almost like, well, we got to finish this now.
Yeah.
And it came out of nowhere. There was somebody popped up you never would have thought of, and there was no particular reason. And 4 paragraphs, it's over with, you know.
That's not fair, is it?
I know.
I hate it when he does
but
that.
But it's fun anyway. You know,
yeah.
So those are some of the outstanding ones that I recall, you know. A lot of good books. It makes me read things that I wouldn't necessarily take the time to read, but I'm glad I did.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And a typical day over at APH, do you come in for, what, 2 or 4 hour session, or how does that work?
Two hour sessions. That's interesting. That's changed, too, over the years at APH, for example. When I first started there, at a large stable of readers, so to speak, many people from the media, local media, and Actors Theater, and people would come in and read maybe once a week for 2 hours, either read a book, and it took a long time to do it that way, or would read a magazine. But over the years, they began to develop a more regular stable of readers, too. There were fewer of us, and we would spend more time doing it, come in every day and read either 1 or 2 sessions a day and regularly, so they could be a little more efficient that way in getting the amount of material recorded.
Yeah.
It seems to work.
Now, when you go in for a two-hour session, you don't come out with 2 hours worth of tape, right?
No. With Perry Mason, sometimes you'll come out, you know, there's 88 minutes, recorded minutes on the side. Uh-huh. And with Perry Mason, a book like that that's very easy to read, not a lot of words to look up, you pretty much know them all, you know, no unusual names. I can get a side on in a session, you know.
So, okay.
We've got basically 2 hours of reading, or a little less than that, by the time you get settled and everything, and take a bathroom break or something. Uh-huh. So I get 88 minutes on.
Okay.
Others, there'll be some that they're very, a lot of foreign languages in the book, or passages, difficult names, names of towns that maybe we haven't looked up yet or something, and you know, you'll get 50 to 60 on. That's very non-productive. Sometimes it just happens.
Yeah.
I think I'll average around 70 to 80. I'll average that, 70 to 80 recorded minutes per session.
So every book, just depending on the content, is going to be totally different.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah, I've noticed sometimes, I don't know if you've done it particularly, but I've noticed Bruce called me up a couple weeks ago, and some of you others have about... I seem to be the consultant on computer pronunciation of specific punctuations and stuff.
That's good.
So I found my niche in life.
Well, that's good. Good to have a niche. And it's good to be a niche, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
There are some things that, boy, if you get somebody who can give you a good answer, you want to hold on to that.
I bet.
We have a lot of resource material there in the studio, as you know. But sometimes you just can't find something somewhere, and you need to know somebody, especially current things.
Yeah.
And it's just not recorded somewhere yet, or not written down.
What other kind of resources do you use? Obviously, dictionaries and encyclopedias.
We'll use lists from... I try to pay attention a lot to newscasts.
And
things like that, because you file a name away and it's coming up, and you think, oh, that's how they pronounce that. And then Barry Bernson is our guy now, but usually somebody from the media who records it will bring in. They have pronunciation guides from their network or from a source that they'll use for people in the news.
Okay.
We'll use that. Of course, they have a Say How guide now. That is on the computer, so we can punch in a name and see if it's on that list.
I'll be darned.
So that's nice. NLS has put out over the years a book called Say How, and it's usually people who are literary figures, people in the news, people of some prominence. It may not be in a biographical, because they haven't died yet, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's a good source. But generally, I'll do what I used to do when I worked at a radio station. If I moved into a new town, and nothing worse than being on the radio in a town and saying the names wrong. You
know, yeah.
You mispronounce Butchel or something.
Uh-huh.
So when I would move into a new town, I would take the newspaper or the phone book and circle all the names that I thought I might run across and that were in the news a lot, or in ads or commercials, and I would ask some local person, how do you pronounce that?
Yeah.
So I do the same thing kind of now. I'll pay attention to a newspaper or a broadcast story and just pick up names that way and find a way, or how to pronounce certain things. It's really important. I'm sure, you know, it's equally so. I hope it doesn't happen as much on the books, but I heard a young radio news person the other day talk about the capital of Scotland is Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And talked about, what was the, oh, she mentioned the Greenwich Village section of New York. I think we can do a little better than that.
Well, and you know, somehow it grades on you wrong. I remember when I lived in Little Rock, there was a street called Rodney Parham. And there was a radio commercial come out saying Rodney Parham Road, you know, and it really grates on you.
Oh, well, yeah, yeah.
Spinach salad with shrimp.
Well, thank you, ma'am.
You're welcome.
Yeah,
you're
over here.
Okay, appreciate it.
Check back soon.
Well, please do.
Some bread over here, Larry.
All right.
To your right. Some bread, a little look like a little oil to dip or something.
Looks like what?
A little oil or something to dip.
Oh, okay. Yeah, some
probably olive oil.
I bet it is.
Very good. Now, how often do you do your podcast, Jerry?
You know, I started out doing this thinking I was going to do it once or twice a week, and I've ended up sometimes doing two or three a day.
Is that right?
And
wow.
I started opening it up to let other people share their expertise and their ideas.
Uh-huh.
And since June 1st, I believe if we put this one up in order, this will be number 407.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
It's been more than one a week.
Yeah, I'd say so. Wow, that's prolific.
It has been so much fun, experimenting with different digital recorders and microphones and the ambience that you can pick up with these binaural microphones. Just a trip to the zoo with the family is really quite an experience. It's you listen to it with earbuds. Yeah, it's fun. So let's see. You say there's some bread right there. All right.
There's a little bowl here. Looks like it's olive oil. And cheese or something.
All right.
Are you from Louisville originally, or where are you from?
No, my dad was in the Air Force. Mm-hmm. I went to a college in Little Rock after he retired, and I just moved up here in '85 to go to work for the printing house. Actually, I'd been writing some little word processing software that Fred Gazzoni started buying when he was working for the Kentucky rehab.
Uh-huh.
And medical transcribers were using it. So he told them about me when APH decided to start doing software.
And, yeah.
Oh, it was a match in heaven. I loved it ever since.
Yeah,
huh? Yep, love it.
Now, with the contract that was just, wasn't what they hoped it to be, how does that affect you with the digital stuff? You're still busy putting the digital things together and everything, aren't you?
We're still doing that, and yeah, it's affected us a lot. But I think one of the biggest things that hurt us is that we were using this NLS contract to kind of develop our software with, to beta test it and make sure we had all the newest cool things that they wanted. I suspect what's going to happen now is they're going to give us all the hard ones.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You've done a lot of the work. You know you can do it.
Yeah.
Let you solve them, yeah.
What about you, Jack? What's this narration contract doing from your perspective?
Well, I'm going to pursue my freelance even more. I've developed that some more. I haven't put a lot of effort into it over the last few years, so
uh-huh.
I'll probably set up a studio in my home, make some contacts. I've already visited a voiceover workshop in Chicago. Of course, anybody can record stuff. It's marketing it, which makes a difference, and this lady is very good with that. How to a pattern for contacting agencies and things like that, and getting this information out. So I'll pursue that more. And it's been kind of fun. As I said, I've got some other business interests that allow me to have fun with things, so that's good.
That's
but,
it.
I got a voice, may as well use it, you know.
Yeah. So this wasn't really a financial strain on you?
Not a strain. It always, you know, when you take a chunk of money and take it away, then you have to adjust it somewhere. You know?
Yeah.
Not a major strain. I don't have to live from it or anything like that.
Yeah.
Hmm. But you get used to a certain chunk of money, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I might find another source for that.
Well, I was kind of talking with somebody the other day. Boy, I'm not in that position of luxury. If I was out the door over there, I'd be out on the street right now.
Yeah.
I'd be hustling to find a job.
Yeah.
It's
a
scary thought.
Well, it's happening more and more everywhere these days, just because of changes in technology.
Uh-huh.
We haven't been manufacturing in the country for a long time now. This is finally, I think, catching up with everybody. got to develop some new skills.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to do that, of course.
Nope. The status quo is too easy.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And my daughter Heather, who's a monitor, you know, it's hit her pretty hard. She's got to go find something right now. She can't wait to see how long they're going to take to ramp back up or do something else again.
Yeah.
She's out looking. My other daughter, Jill, who's a narrator, already has several things going. She works in the Public Radio Partnership.
Oh, does she?
And has some other narration things that she does. And she's pursuing this voiceover thing big time through the lady in Chicago.
Okay. Now, are some of the narrators, it seems like since this Potomac got so much of the contract that they are probably hurting for narrators right now. Is that true? Do you know?
I don't know. May very well be. I've not been in contact with them or talked with them today, but that may be a possibility also. See if we can do something, ship it to them or whatever. You know.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. You know, we were just talking about this global economy and not having to be there.
Right.
Seems like you could sit right here and do it just as well as
like
over there.
You know, I don't know all the technicalities, but I don't know if they've had 500 books before or not.
Yeah.
But I would think it would be pretty rough to jump up to 500 books if you weren't used to using that many people for monitors and proofers.
Doing well?
We are.
Do you want a little more coffee? You're about half empty.
I'm sure. I'll take a little warm up there.
So I'm going to meet with some of the narrators, I think, next Monday night. We'll get together and kind of see where everything is.
Oh, are you?
And talk about it. So I'm sure I'll hear something in it. But I'm sure there are people out there looking for other sources like that, ways to do it.
Yeah, yeah. I guess the local radio market is not that loose to be able to take that number of people in there.
No.
Yeah, I was talking with Richard, and he doesn't seem very hopeful of finding anything.
Who was that?
Richard Houndstone.
Oh, yeah. There's not much out there in the radio business right now. Certainly the pays anything.
Yeah.
Their channel owns most everything. So.
Thank you.
Even Jill, who does, she does the voice work for WFPL. It's all taped. You know, she goes in an hour a day and records the breaks or something. So
yeah.
There's nobody there. There are a few people, morning and afternoon, I think. Morning and afternoon drive.
Yeah.
Otherwise, everything's recorded.
I'll be darned.
So the radio market has changed over the years. In fact, if you go to Clear Channel now, which I work at WHAS, they on HAS and AMC, you can go there at a certain time of the day and there'll be somebody live on, well, let's see, in the middle of the day. I don't even know if they've got a live person on AMC or not. On HAS, they're, you know, they have Limbaugh, that's tape.
Oh, yeah.
And I bet most of the others in the middle of the day are all voice tracked, you know, it's all computerized.
I bet they are.
It's just the nature of the beast anymore.
I guess there's a lot of people that think that over-the-air radio, the content is not what people are after anymore. What's your feeling on that?
Well, of course, I grew up with that. But, you know, I don't listen very much, quite honestly. I've got CDs in or... Of course, there's also Sirius satellite radio and all that sort of thing. I will tune it in when I'm in the car to get traffic or a newscast or something like that, if it's the top of the hour.
Yeah.
But I don't listen too much anymore, really. I get information from other sources. Or I listen to music or books on CD.
Do you do that?
Some. Mm. Or I should say books on tape. Actually, I have not done that until recently, and my daughter gave me the tapes of Frank McCourt, the guy that wrote Angela's Ashes and Tiz, and he's recording Tiz. And my wife and I were taking a trip a few weeks ago, about a 5-6 hour drive. And I go, I'll put this in just to, I want to hear how he sounds. And we were hooked. We listened the whole way, you know.
Oh, me.
The car will pop in there. So we're enjoying that. But radio and of course, even television, you know, so many choices on cable and satellite and everything else now. You know, I really hardly ever watch the local even network channels. Tune it in the evening, again, to get the newscast. But I find myself thinking, hey, I got a quick source. I don't have to wait till 11 to find that out, you know, or so many other sources out there. How about you? What do you listen to?
You know, I don't listen to any radio anymore at all.
Uh-huh. And that's a change over the years?
Yeah, absolutely. I really hate to even say the word podcast because I way overuse it, but there's actually some pretty specialized podcasts out now. In fact, one of them I really enjoy is the NBC Nightly News podcast. Yeah, it's just what they put on the TV minus the commercials, and it's an hour or two later. So I'll just take that to bed in the evening and catch up on the day's news.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah.
17 minutes, I've got that 30 minutes worth.
That's right. You've got it handy there. It's your convenience.
Yeah, and you can stop it and repeat it or whatever.
Yeah. Well, the technology is changing a lot of things with TiVo and all that. You know, they can leave and come back or cut out whatever you want.
Yeah, I love that. I've got one of these media center computers that's basically the same thing as a TiVo. And it's amazing. I don't really watch much TV, but it's nice to find something that you want to record and just hit a button. It'll record the whole series if you want.
Yeah, right when you want to.
Yeah.
How long have you been meshing with the electronics and things like that? Have you done that all your life? Or
no.
Computers?
I got started in early 80s, I guess.
And you're not even a Harvard graduate, are you?
I'm a Hope High School graduate.
That's probably ahead of my Harvard graduation, to tell you the truth. Harvard was a little farm town.
So's Hope. Yeah, I really just, I actually was planning on going into law as a career and just kind of got sidetracked on these computers when the Apple IIe came out in the early 80s. I think it was 83.
Wow.
Oh, I got hooked immediately. It was one of those things where you can't really imagine where you can go with this thing, you know? And been having more fun than I deserve with it ever since.
Where do you see it going from here? Or are we just getting started with it? Or, I mean,
now, I can't claim to be the one that came up with these ideas, but Ray Kurzweil is one who is a good one to look to for how things are going to be in the future. And he really he has this idea that by 2020, the processing power is actually going to be equivalent to that of a human brain.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
wow.
After that is when things really start accelerating because computers can start designing themselves.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And they'll also be getting smaller, so you'll actually be... You may have computers running through your bloodstream checking, I don't know... blood pressure levels or whatever, you know, monitoring your system. And the thing that's really the scariest and the most interesting is he swears up and down that, you know, within 10 or 20 years, you'll be able to preserve your consciousness. You'll be able to do a brain scan and store it on disk, which then means your body is just a life support. I mean, kind of like what you've been hearing in science fiction, you know. Kind of interesting to talk about, or to think about that stuff. But I guess in the immediate future, some of the things that, you know, you can obviously see that are coming pretty quick are a lot more entertainment with the devices than just raw computing power or word processing. And also the idea of using these things for your senses. You know, obviously already blind people are use the heck out of them because it's access to information that wouldn't be available anywhere else. But do you ever think that, you know, it really wouldn't be that hard to, especially if the devices were miniaturized enough, that where you could actually think, where you could actually think about some commands, say you wanted to write a story or whatever, you wouldn't actually put your hands physically on a keyboard. You could just think about the process of opening up a word processor and writing into it. That's not really that far off.
Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, they've already done real crude experiments with, you know, alpha waves or whatever.
Well, it opens a lot of doors for a lot of people, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And, you know, it also allows you, you know, while you're driving down the road on your road trip, you could be working on whatever.
Yep. Wow.
A few directions they could be going.
Well, that's interesting for some of us who have trouble thinking anyway. We're really.
Yep. Well, is there anything else you'd like to tell faithful talking book listeners about you or your life or your narration?
Well, just keep listening and keep looking for your favorites out there and stay in touch with us. It's always nice. One of the nice things is we enjoy them. On the trip to Mississippi was that it really helped us to see who's on the other side of it, who's on the receiving end. That's really what it's all about and why we're doing that.
Sure.
Easy to get caught up in a little hole in the basement where we record and not realize there's a whole big world out there as somebody is listening on the other end. It's a little like when I was on the radio, you'd meet people and they'd say, oh, that's what you look like. You know, and you're never sure how they meant that. You know?
Yeah.
But the same thing here, you know. We kind of got that this weekend. Oh, it's great to meet you and all that stuff. We're glad that people are out there listening. We're glad to be recorded.
Well, I know you've got some mighty big fans out there.
Well, I'm glad about that. I've got some. I enjoy the listeners. Enjoy them very much.
Do you have any kind of way that people could contact you? Do you want to give out an email or anything?
Sure. They could just send it to jack.fox@insightbb.com.
Okay.
And that goes right to my email.
Great.
Be happy to have it.
Well, thank you very much, Jack. It's been
my pleasure talking with you.
I
appreciate the work that you do. Thank you very much for all the things you do and the attitude you do it with and everything. I appreciate that very much.
I'll tell you what, we've had a great relationship with you guys down there in the studio. I think we've been working so well together. It's phenomenal.
Oh,
it's really made things.
You've added obviously new life to what we've done. I mean, you've revolutionized things.
Oh, man, love to hear
that. That's great. Well, you have. Listen, every time we do corrections, we say, thank you, Larry. Thank you, Rob. I can remember days when we had those big reel-to-reel tapes. And they literally, Larry, would mark the mistakes with pieces of paper in the tape. So you see a tape, and then if you got somebody whose reflexes weren't particularly good, they'd start forwarding the tape and go past it, and they have to stop it and wind it back up again. So we're very appreciative of what you've done. That's great.
You know, the funniest thing, I think, when y'all switched over to digital was, didn't you used to have like a 2 or 3 second delay from what you were hearing was 2 or 3 seconds behind, and you know, judging your corrections to drop them in. That must have been a very
became an art or a nightmare. One of the two. More often a nightmare.
So was it pretty easy to untrain yourself to do that with the?
Oh, with your system. Oh yeah, just great.
Oh, good.
And of course we got monitors now who also the ones who embrace it. Some of them go overboard. They want to see if we can just drop in a word, you know, sometimes. And sometimes you can.
But sometimes.
It's better to do the whole sentence so it fits nicely. But
yeah.
it's a challenge, you know. Say, hey, let's see if we can do it here.
Well, you know, one of the things Rob and I have been talking about doing is being able to do like a search and replace on a pattern of audio. So For instance, you wanted to say tomato, but you really said tomato throughout the whole book.
Yeah.
That's some tricky stuff that we're nowhere near ready to do yet, but it's kind of fun to think about that kind of flexibility.
That would be, yeah. Yeah. And then you could do it once and replace all over or whatever.
Yeah.
Keep working. Yep. Then we'll just show up and turn the pages. That's all we'll have to do.
I really did envision a system for you guys that still might come up of where you would actually, I know this isn't a popular idea, but you would actually have a tablet that displayed the text on it instead of holding a physical book. And they do have some display techniques now that make it look like a book. But one of the advantages of that is that, you know, as you're reading, you could, for instance, tap the beginning of the paragraph, and that would put a mark into the audio at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So you could actually synchronize the text and the audio very easily.
Yeah.
So, always think that.
Keep working.
We will. All right. Well, that was fun.
You're fixed up, huh?
Yeah. Appreciate that, Jack.
Get your site and all that stuff so I can...
Oh, it's pretty easy. Blindcooltech.com.
Blindcooltech.com. C-O-O-L.
Yeah.
Blindcooltech.
Yeah. Yep, should have you up there in the morning.
Well, good. I'll check it out.
All right.
Blindcooltech.com. Mm-hmm. So you just keep your recorder and everything handy, and you run into somebody and you talk with them all the time.
Man, I have started going nowhere without it. It's amazing what you can come up with if you're ready to go, you know. I use this. I've got a little bitty one here. Have you seen these Olympus digital recorders?
My goodness. Holy
and the God. Quality of that, you would not believe, Jack.
Isn't that amazing?
It's stereo. It is amazing.
Wow.
And the thing pulls apart, and there's a little USB port inside it. So you hook it directly to your PC and transfer your file right over.
That's amazing.
It is.
I don't understand the technology. I can't do it, but I love it. I appreciate it. It's like, well, because I don't know how the transmission on my car works either, but I enjoy driving it.
Nice. That's it. We don't have to know.
The same thing here. Guys like you can understand it and put it in our hands. I had a buddy that talked about we started using more of the technology of the internet. We call it the internet, but really just the technology out there and for our business. And he said, Jack, when the technology gets as easy as opening the refrigerator door, then, you know, everybody will be there. You know,
mm-hmm.
And that's happening.
Yeah.
There are people now doing things. In fact, Jill and I looked at the airport the other day, and now at the airport they have places for people to sit and plug in their computer. Used to, you'd guys be hanging around a pole where there was a any place you could find it out.
Exactly.
People are charging their cell phones, their online, their wireless, it's everything. You know.
Well, and too, these self-check-in kiosks.
Oh, yeah.
What a great idea.
We went up, we had our tickets for electronic. They were arranged by the people in Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
We went up to the Delta kiosk, typed in, let's see, we had choices, our name, all Jill did was actually scan her credit card. She didn't buy the ticket with her credit card, but her name popped up there. Hers and mine were on the same ticket. Punched everything else, just punched it in.
Isn't that amazing?
I love it. Very, very nice. But more and more people are doing it now, too. Somebody said the other day that the big age gap was... I'm all finished, yes, sir.
Thank you,
I appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
The big age gap was the 35 to 50, you know.
That makes sense.
But the younger ones... Although it was interesting, they said that the... this was the lady in Chicago she was talking about at the voiceover thing. She said, now the older people, the grandparents, they get on because, you know, they can do email, they can keep up with grandkids. they save money on a phone call, all that stuff.
Yeah.
The younger people were actually probably more tech savvy. They knew how things, but it took them longer to find stuff. Not because they didn't know how, but they'd get sidetracked.
Yeah.
They're going to look up iPod, so they come in. It took them 15 minutes to find something. Whereas the older people, where this is what I need, I want this, so bam, I go right to it.
I can see that.
But those two segments right there are the hottest ones right now. Mm. People using the technology and applying it to their everyday lives.
I can sure see that. I was just commenting.
You've been listening to Blind Cool Tech. Visit us on the web at blindcooltech.com. Our email address is blindcooltech@gmail.com. And our comment line is 206-984-9203.
Describing, you know, how to start a weblog and just walk you through the process.